Welcome everyone, Mike Adams here. Today we've got an amazing guest, a legend in finance and precious metals, Bill Holter. You've seen him in numerous interviews and he knows what's coming. His mind is covering all the events. He's gonna talk to us today about what he believes is the coming financial, well, I don't know if we're gonna use the word collapse or certainly a fiat currency collapse, but he joins us today. His website is jsmindset.com. We'll put it on screen for you. That's M-I-N-E-S-E-T. So jsmindset.com. Bill Holter, sir, it's an honor to have you on. I'm a fan of your work. Welcome to the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Mike.
Well, you have been on top of this game for quite some time, and you've been right again and again and again. Tell us, to start with, where you think we are right now in terms of the timeline of currency collapse, market collapse, or what do you think is going to happen?
I think we're in the bottom of the ninth inning, probably two outs. I think this thing comes to fruition very, very possibly before the election.
Really? That soon?
Yeah, well, the reason I say that is you may have seen the news a couple days ago that the Vatican has contacted all of their dioceses across the world and telling them to send their capital back to Rome.
Saw that.
Why would they do that and use a September 30th deadline? That's, you know, that's a tell on its own. But if you look at all the other things that are going on, I mean, it's everything is coming together at one time.
So if the collapse, well, first of all, let me ask you, what do you think this is going to look like? Is it like a Jim Rickards Ice Nine freezing of transactions? Or, you know, are we talking about the globalists trying to push us into a central bank digital currency all of a sudden to save themselves? What is this going to look like in your view?
Well, I think there's no question that we are going to be pushed toward or into a central bank digital currency. That is the plan. There's no question about that. I've been for years, what clued me in to begin with was the credit problem. There's just too much debt outstanding. It can never be paid back. It has to default. It has to either default through non-payment or through hyperinflation. And another way to describe hyperinflation would be a currency collapse. Now understand that currency is debt-based itself. So this is like a chicken or the egg type of thing. Does the currency collapse because credit collapses, or does credit collapse because the currencies collapse? I don't know, but I do see the end game as a collapsed financial system due to credit dominoes, currency collapsing, and obviously the big one are derivatives. Over $250 billion worth of derivatives throughout the world, they cannot be paid. And the question is, what's the value of a contract that cannot perform? And the answer is zero.
Right, absolutely. And we've seen how the world is reshaping itself right now, where America and Western nations are based on creating debt and using debt as leverage to exert political power around the world.
Right.
Where Russia, China, India, the BRICS nations, and so on, they are based on commodities. They've got the energy, the oil, the coal, the gas. They've got the fertilizer. They've got food crops in abundance. Western Europe is about to freeze to death this coming winter. Russia is going to be toasty warm and fully fed. Isn't this a sign of sort of where all this is going?
Well, it is. And if you go back to the day before the Russian operation, I think it's important that everyone, if they can get a copy of his speech, read the entire speech. That speech, basically what he said is they want free and fair settlement. Yeah, it's you're absolutely right. There is a divide between East and West. And I would first say I think it's very important to read Vladimir Putin's statement just before the operation started. What he was saying is that they are tired of giving real goods for fake paper. They want to trade real and fair trade settlement. They want something for something. And what I'm going to say here is it's my opinion that that was the beginning of the reset, not the Klaus Schwab reset. There's a Western reset. And I think when all is said and done, I think that's going to be mistaken, if you will. They will try to reset that on the West, but the East is not going to go along with that. The real true reset is between East and West. And it's pretty clear. The West is full of debt, and the East, I mean, you can look at China. Yes, they've taken on all kinds of debt, but what did they do with that debt? They built infrastructure. They built stuff. So when the debt collapses, they're going to be left with stuff, and the West has eaten their seed corn.
What is America going to look like on the day, and I guess a few days after that, when this collapse begins? Because when people can't use their ATMs, when the food stamps stop working, which they do every month, it seems anyway, for a while, when the banks aren't functioning, or when the dollar just collapses overnight, what's going to happen in the cities of America, in your view?
I've been on the record for years that living in a city is the absolute worst thing you could possibly do. There's a huge population, obviously, in cities. You have no idea who friend or foe is. You have no idea what direction danger is going to come at you from. It's my thought process that you either are rural or certainly outside of suburbs, or you're going to have real difficulty. I think when this thing does go down, I certainly think that, like you said, the ATMs are going to go down, credit cards are going to go down, grocery stores will probably just go back 2 years ago with COVID. Grocery stores were wiped out within a day or 2 days. They only keep 3 days worth of product on the shelves, and it's not like they have little elves in the back room that are baking loads of bread. Everything gets trucked in. And I use the analogy of a loaf of bread. Think about how many uses of credit there are from that farmer's wheat field to the loaf of bread. I mean, the farmer's got to use credit, what, 5, 6, 7 times. Does he own his tractor outright? He's got to pay for fertilizer. He's got to pay for seed. He's got to pay for diesel. And then you've between there and the silo, you've got to ship it. Then the silo uses credit. Then you've used credit again for shipping to the production facilities. So there's credit used all the way through that process. And if just one use of credit breaks down, there's no loaf of bread. So it's like a chain where one link breaks, it snaps in half. The chain is no longer usable.
But this is exactly what we're seeing in Sri Lanka. So when the local currency or the debt instruments collapsed, then they couldn't get fuel into the country.
Right.
The farmers couldn't buy fuel. So they had crops rotting in the field because they couldn't get them into distribution. It's exactly as you're saying. But some people think, oh, Sri Lanka, that's far away. They don't even know where that is. And granted, it's a small country compared to the United States. But aren't the lessons that we're observing there really the same lessons that haunt America as well?
It's a roadmap. What's the difference? The only difference is that Sri Lanka is not the world's reserve currency. So they can't just print whatever their currency is and be accepted by the world. The world is shunning their currency. That's exactly what's going to happen to the dollar. That's exactly where we stand right now between East and West. The East produces goods. The West does not produce anywhere near what the East produces. And once you have a credit crisis, a currency crisis, then it becomes, no, and just listen to what Vladimir Putin said back in February. He said, we will accept rubles or, of course, gold. And now what they're doing, or what Russia is doing, is they are doing deals. They just did a deal directly with India, and they're trading in rupees and rubles. So there's no need for dollars. What this just shows is that the dollar is being pushed out of use. It's not necessary as it once was. And if I had to pick one event that could absolutely torpedo the dollar overnight, it would be the Saudis saying either we'll accept any and all currencies, or God forbid they say that we won't accept dollars anymore.
Now, since you bring up gold, and I've been begging to ask you this question, actually, you know, you're a precious metals representative with Miles Franklin.
Right.
And you help a lot of people get squared away on their precious metals. I've got a lot of questions for you about this. But as you know, recently, a lot of holders of physical gold and silver were demanding withdrawals and drawdowns from the COMEX as well as the London Metals Exchange, the LME. And the London Metals Exchange, as you know, has been rigged. It's a total fraud. You saw that with the nickel markets, how
exactly.
They protected the Chinese trader and reversed a bunch of trades. So insane. That's not even a market system. It's not even gambling. It's just total fraud. But I a lot of questions. But one is, what's your interpretation of why people, wealthy people, are drawing down physical gold and silver? And then secondly, what kind of new people are coming to you today interested in gold and silver who never thought about it before?
First off, you're correct. The LBMA novated the contract, and that is outright fraud. That is exactly what you're going to see, not only in gold, not only in silver, but pretty much in all commodities markets. You're going to see a rush for delivery demand, which can't be met, and you will see all of these markets for what they are. They're fraudulent. As far as the drawdowns are concerned, that's not your average wealthy person. The drawdowns from COMEX, your drawdowns from the LBMA, you're looking at hedge funds, you're looking at institutions. Those are the big boys. As far as the retail is concerned, we're finally at the point now, and I'm going to say it's probably been for the last 2 years, maybe a little more than 2 years. The average person knows there's something wrong. They feel it in their gut. It's the Holy Spirit telling them there's something wrong, but they don't know what it is. They can't put their finger on it. But man, by nature, I mean, go back 1,000 years, by nature, when you become fearful, you become defensive. And defensive means in today's world, it's called go to cash. The difference now is cash is not what cash used to be 50, 100 years ago. 100 years ago, you can convert dollars into gold at a bank, or you could convert gold into dollars. They were interchangeable. Then that link broke. So the many, many people today know and they feel that there's something really wrong. They don't know what it is, and they're becoming defensive. And just from instinct, they're going to gold and silver just because they've been money for 5,000 years. And I think the average person deep down understands that if you hold a piece of paper, it's a piece of paper, it's a promise. Whereas an ounce of gold or an ounce of silver, it doesn't promise anything at all. All it is proof that labor, capital, and equipment have already been used to create that.
The intrinsic value of gold and silver, it goes far beyond, well, you know, there's counterparty risk in everything else, which I think is what you're just saying. So even if you have a piece of paper that says you own gold and silver, that's counterparty risk on the part of whoever is holding that gold and silver.
Right.
I'm not opposed. I mean, some circumstances, people can use vaults that are inspected and audited and insured and so on. I get it. But even the insurance industry has counterparty risk.
Right.
And every vault has counterparty risk. It's like you say, Bill, gold and silver in your hands. The only risk you have there is if you lose it or maybe somebody tries to steal it. But those are things that you have control over.
Right.
That's the key difference. But the follow-up question on that is, what kind of new people are coming to you now that you hadn't heard from before? And are you finding yourself having to educate people about it, or do they already get it when they call you?
No, we're definitely having to educate people. They just call up there. At this point, it's like, I want some gold, I want some silver. And again, I think that's because they understand there is no default risk. It's something that you can't wake up tomorrow morning and it's gone. But yes, we're getting we're getting people they want to get their money out of the banks. We're getting people that have exited the stock market. We've gotten a bunch of people that have even exited real estate, commercial real estate. The thing is, from an education standpoint, they're saying we want gold or we want silver, but they don't know what form. And the real education, there's a little bit of education as to, you know, what we're just talking about now as far as the no default risk, et cetera. But the difference between a 1 ounce bar, a 1 ounce generic, a 1 ounce sovereign, or a 1 ounce gold or silver eagle, or you know, go back 100 plus years, a pre-1933 gold piece. There is a difference. There's a reason that you want the higher quality metal. When I say higher quality metal, in the United States, you want eagles. You want junk. In silver, you want either eagles or junk. Those are U.S. mint lineage. In gold, you want eagles or preferably the pre-1933 gold, because owning that, you are considered a collector, because those are collectibles. You're not considered a hoarder. Now, can they change the laws? Of course, they change laws all the time. But the way it stands right now, in the event of a confiscation, your best bet is to own a U.S. mint lineage coin.
Now, define junk for those who are new
sure.
to that topic, because not everybody understands that.
Yeah, junk silver, the better term is constitutional silver. It's 1964 and earlier dimes, quarters, half dollars, and silver dollars. Those are the dimes, quarters, and halves are 0.715% of the coin is silver, and the silver dollars are 0.77%+ silver. Now, another reason that you want U.S. coin, okay, so the system goes down, and I mean, I deal in this stuff all the time, but when the system goes down, if somebody wants to trade me a gold bar, I can't test it. They want to trade me a silver bar, I can't test it. But I know what an eagle looks like. They're difficult to counterfeit. They can be counterfeited, but you can drop them on a table and listen to them. You can drop a silver dime. And the other thing about junk silver that you want, the reason you want junk silver is because it's in small denominations. It's in $1.38 equals 1 ounce. So that means, call it 14 dimes is 1 ounce. In a broken down situation, farmers will take, and they actually would prefer to take silver over cash even today, but they will take silver dimes. So you've got 14 transactions to buy eggs with your local farmer versus one with a silver eagle or a 1 ounce bar or what have you. And you could drop a silver dime on a table versus a current dime, and you know, hands down, you'll know which is which.
What's going to happen to people who have no silver, no gold, no preparedness, no backup food supplies? They're just living paycheck to paycheck, which is about 40%+ of the American people,
right?
You know? And they, you know, they're entirely dependent on the system. They don't even have cash. Their pantry is only maybe 2 days deep, and they eat at restaurants all the time. What's going to happen to those people?
Sadly, they're not going to make it. They're going to be part of the depopulation event. And I firmly believe that what's happening today is not by mistake. It's a plan. It is a planned depopulation.
Well, let's talk about food then for a second here. Now, I know your area of expertise is finance and you know, money and gold and so on, but I know you've been paying attention to the farming situation. You have fertilizer scarcity. You saw ammonia plants have shut down all across Western Europe, 70% reduction in the current capacity of ammonia production, which goes into the nitrogen-based fertilizers. And you had fertilizer plants like CF Industries in the United States told by Union Pacific Railroad that we're not going to carry your loads anymore. So how are you supposed to get fertilizer to farmers? You've got, what, 800,000 acres in California that wasn't even planted this year,
right,
because of drought. So what's the food situation looking like from your vantage point, both in America and in Europe?
Well, it looks like it's part of the plan. One thing you forgot to mention is all these processing plants that have burned down, exploded, what have you. It's all about creating less supply, higher prices, and I mean, the higher prices and less supply is going to shut some people out on its own without the system coming down.
What were the sanctions against Russia? Was it incompetence on the part of Western leaders that it was all going to blow back onto the West? Or was it perhaps part of a plan, knowing that it would crush the West?
Part of the plan, in my opinion.
You talk to us about the sanctions, or sort of where is this going to go? Because the West can't back down at this point. They can't admit, oh, we were wrong, or, you know, Russia, sorry. They're not going to apologize to Putin.
Yeah, the sanctions did not then, and they certainly don't make any sense now, because the West is no longer the big producer to the world. I mean, after World War II, the United States was the production center of the world for almost any product. And now, for the last 20, 30 years, I mean, go back to Ross Perot with the giant sucking sound from NAFTA. He was absolutely right. We've offshored so many production jobs, so many production facilities, and the machines that we had that are now antiquated anyway are gone. So we don't even have the ability, to produce. And what we've done, we've financialized our society, where the thought process has been that, oh, well, they'll take dollars forever, so we're fine. We can just send them dollars and we'll get goods. But that is now changing.
Do you think price controls are coming to America in terms of food and fuel?
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, I was on the record. I did an interview with my partner, Jim Sinclair, probably 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And the title of it was "The World is Venezuela." And just from a debt standpoint, that was when the toilet paper shortages started. And, you know, people here in the United States were kind of laughing about it. Well, it's coming. It's going to be all over the world. This is not just it's not just not Venezuela's socialist mistake. It is a mistake carried out by the West that is trying to turn socialist.
And I think Venezuela is exactly the right comparison here, because you have this authoritarian tyranny, gun control, mm-hmm. gun confiscation, combined with mass starvation, biometric controls over food purchases,
yep.
energy scarcity. And then I believe also the Venezuelan government ends up arming whoever are the friendly insurgents who might murder their political opposition. And frankly, with the activities of the FBI right now in America, it's starting to look the same way, isn't it?
Yeah, it really does. And in my opinion, the reason they have not snapped the trap shut yet is because of the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment is the only thing that stands between the system not collapsing and the population being overrun. It's the only thing left is the Second Amendment. I mean, just look at what happened in Australia and New Zealand. You know, they made, 97% of the population, it was absolutely mandatory to be jabbed. You couldn't leave your house. You were locked in your home. I mean, that could not be done in the United States as it stands right now with the Second Amendment.
But their efforts to try to take away the guns from the American people right now, they cannot possibly succeed. Too many Americans simply won't go along with it. Even if they pull off a false flag or some kind of terrorist event and try to blame gun owners, people just aren't going to go for it. Doesn't that mean that as long as we hold the line on the Second Amendment, that the tyranny can't succeed?
I wouldn't say it can't succeed. And the reason I say that is you could have an EMP. We could be starved out. Water supplies could be tainted, what have you. Just because you have a gun and somebody can't enter your house or force you to do something, you know, it's like the military operation where you surround the fort and you wait until they come out because they don't have any food or water left.
Right. I mean, what you're describing, and I agree with you, is the government is essentially running a blockade against its own people.
Correct. And I agree with that.
It's like World War II when the U.S. Navy surrounded Japan mm-hmm. and ran a naval blockade. No energy, no food imports for you, Japan.
Right.
But now they're doing that to us.
Right.
Well, and so Japan struck out with Pearl Harbor. Is the plan to get the American people to lash out? Are they trying to maybe invoke some kind of an armed insurrection so they could call everybody extremists?
On one hand, yes, I think there is a provocation. On the other hand, I think you'll have a certain percentage of the population, I don't know what it is, maybe it might be as high as 50%, that'll just say, you know, save us. They'll say, Daddy, save us, you know, to the government.
But the government can only print currency. They can't print food or
right.
print energy.
Exactly.
And, you know, so you're going to be sitting there, a millionaire in currency, starving
right.
your ass off and freezing.
That's right.
Right?
Right. And that's why it's important to be as self-sufficient as you possibly can, so that you're not relying on someone else, you're not relying on the government to feed you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you saw with the forgiving of the student loans, that's another form of stimulus. They're trying to push
right.
money back into the system. And it seems like in California, when the fuel prices were high, they mailed out all these debit cards. Here, you can use this to buy fuel. The only answer that the U.S. government, at least under Biden, can come up with is print more money and hand it out to people. But that doesn't solve these problems.
Well, it exacerbates the problem. It creates more inflation. It speeds up the collapse is what it does. But that's been Washington's playbook for what? Well, you could
since
actually
71, right?
Well, since 71, because that's when Nixon took us off the gold standard. But you could go back to the 60s with welfare, throw money at the problem. You know, throw money at schools, and where has it gotten us? It's just gotten us deeper in debt and society turning more upside down, because it's broken. What it's done is it's broken the mindset of self-sufficiency.
Right, right. And we're just about out of time for this interview, Bill, but just to ask you to summarize, it seems like you're saying that we've been living through a maybe 80-year experiment, a social engineering experiment, a debt experiment. This experiment has failed, and maybe the failure wasn't obvious to a lot of people until right now, but that's how these things go. It's failing, but the people who built this failed system can't do anything other than what they have already done, which is print more money. And so we're approaching the final days of this chapter of this experiment
right.
of the American empire.
I'm going to say that it's 109 years. You go back to 1913. That's when the Federal Reserve began. And if you read the book, The Creature from Jekyll Isle, I encourage everyone to read that book. That was the game plan. Get the United States. The only way to take the United States down was to do it internally. And what they've done is they've gotten individuals, corporations, the whole system, the government, everything is grossly in debt. And once you have total debt saturation, which we have now, and then you force or create a depression. And that's what they're doing by raising interest rates. They're raising interest rates on the biggest debt bubble in the history of history. What would you expect? Total collapse.
Well, it's a sobering conclusion, but I can't find any fault with what you've said here today, Bill. I think you're right on the mark. And I want to encourage our listeners, if they want to follow your work, the website is jsmindset.com. We'll put it on screen for people. How else can people find you and follow your analysis?
You can actually, if you want to email me personally, you can go, my email address is bholter@hotmail.com.
bholter@hotmail.com. Well, Bill, it's been an honor to speak with you about this. You're a serious man. You have
most of the time.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, I got a smile out of you at least once in this interview. But I'm the same way. We are in some devastating times. Sometimes we have to laugh. But
yeah, I wish I could tell you something different, but it is what it is.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's math. At this point, it's pure math.
Well,
I mean, there is not a way out. We're mathematically in a box.
Okay. Well, we'll be talking with you more about some other topics, but I want to thank you for your time today, Bill, and your wisdom and your warning. And folks, pay attention to this. Get prepared, or you'll get steamrolled by what's about to happen. Thank you so much, Mr. Holter.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Mike.